So, what if the massive stainless steel, basically phone booth sized lung testing machine at your local hospital could be shrunk down?
Shrunk down to like the size of your smartphone.
Right, exactly, and
Yeah.
without losing a single drop of clinical accuracy.
Which is the most important part.
Yeah. So today we're looking at how a piece of plastic you can just hold in your hand is, well, it's effectively replacing the hospital pulmonary lab.
It really is. I mean, it's a huge shift.
Because, I mean, if you've ever had your lung function formally tested, you know the drill, right? You sit inside this sealed glass box, you wear a nose clip.
Oh, yeah, the nose clip is the worst
It
part.
is. And you blow into this giant apparatus while a technician essentially cheers you on. It's really intimidating.
Very. But that sheer physical size, it gives you a sense of security, you know?
Yeah, you naturally assume that a machine taking up half the room must be producing like infallible medical data.
We do tend to equate the physical footprint of medical infrastructure with its reliability. But the reality of modern respiratory medicine is that those massive labs, they're actually creating a bottleneck.
Really? A bottleneck.
Yeah, I mean, clinics are under immense pressure to increase patient throughput. And the traditional model of making a patient, schedule an appointment, drive to a hospital, and sit in a glass box, it just isn't sustainable for long-term care.
That makes total sense. And that brings us to the source material for today's deep dive. We are looking at a technical document titled Clinical Standards and Applications of Portable Spirometry.
Right, and it details the engineering required to move that entire diagnostic process directly into the patient's living room.
Okay, let's unpack this. The mission for this deep dive is to decode exactly how that happens. Like, how does a pocket-sized device physically measure the mechanics of your breath?
And how software bridges the gap between a pristine lab and your couch.
Yes. And crucially, what actually separates a true diagnostic tool from, I don't know, a cheap wellness gadget you might find online?
That's a huge distinction.
Because whether you are a healthcare professional or maybe someone managing a respiratory condition, or honestly just a curious listener interested in the future of medical tech, this decentralization is fundamentally changing how you interact with your own physiological data.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to appreciate the shift, we really have to establish what makes a portable machine trustworthy to a physician.
Right, because a doctor isn't gonna like alter your medication based on a rough estimate from a cheap consumer gadget.
Exactly. The dividing line in the medical world is a strict adherence to rigorous measurement standards. I mean, clinical grade is defined entirely by the math happening inside the casing.
And the document outlines some incredibly tight thresholds for that math. First, there's volume accuracy.
Right.
The device has to measure the total amount of air you exhale accurately within plus or minus 3% or 50 milliliters, whichever is greater.
This is a tiny margin of error.
It really is. To put that in perspective, 50 milliliters is about the size of a standard shot
Oh,
glass.
that's a good way to picture it.
Yeah, so out of the liters of air you are forcefully pushing out of your lungs, the machine cannot be off by more than a shot glass worth of air. It's like baking.
Baking.
Yeah, like a pinch of salt is fine for home cooking, right?
Right.
But a commercial bakery needs measurements down to the milligram.
Wow, right. Good analogy.
And then there is flow accuracy, meaning the device has to track the speed of that air consistently, whether you are blowing with the force of a hurricane or just giving a weak sigh.
What's fascinating here is that meeting these specific thresholds is the dividing line. It also has to prove repeatability.
What does that mean in this context?
Well, a proper lung function test requires a patient to perform a forced expiratory maneuver, meaning they inhale as deeply as humanly possible
Right.
and then blast that air out as hard and fast as they can, repeatedly. The device must show minimal variation across those attempts.
So if it gives different readings for the same effort, it's useless.
Exactly. If the internal sensors give wildly different readings for the exact same physical effort, the data is entirely useless for diagnosis. Devices that pass this test aren't just for preliminary screening, they can actually derive definitive clinical decisions.
Wow. I mean, I understand how a giant hospital machine with massive sensors achieves that, but doing it in a handheld tube seems like a physics nightmare.
It's definitely an engineering challenge.
Especially when you consider the environment. The source material mentions the device actively compensates for room temperature, barometric pressure, and humidity. These machines actually adjust for a humid day versus a dry room just to ensure the data is airtight.
They have to.
But why? Why does the weather inside my living room matter to a piece of plastic measuring my breath?
It comes down to the physical properties of air density. When you exhale, your breath is at body temperature. nearly 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right, okay.
And it's fully saturated with humidity from your lungs. But the moment that air leaves your mouth and enters the device, it hits the ambient air of your room.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. If you are sitting in a highly air-conditioned, cold, dry room in the middle of winter, your breath cools and condenses incredibly fast. The physical volume of that air literally shrinks as it cools.
Wait, really? So the sensors inside the device might be measuring perfectly, but the actual substance they're measuring, the air, is literally changing shape.
That is the core challenge. If you calibrate a machine in a warm, humid lab, and then a patient uses it in a cold, dry house, the sensors will underreport the volume of air simply because the air contracted.
That's wild.
To achieve clinical grade status, these portable spirometers have to perform real-time mathematical compensation. They measure the ambient temperature and pressure, and they instantly calculate a correction factor.
So the volume recorded matches the actual volume that was inside your lungs, regardless of the room's climate.
Exactly.
Which is an incredible triumph of hardware engineering. But this is where I hit a logical wall. Yeah. You can build the most perfect environmentally compensated sensor on the planet, but the moment you take it out of the pristine clinic and hand it to an unsupervised patient on their couch,
you introduce a chaotic variable.
The most chaotic variable possible. Human error. Wait, if the patient is blowing into the machine incorrectly because a doctor isn't standing right there, doesn't that inherently degrade the data no matter how good the hardware is?
It's a valid concern. The operational dynamics shift entirely. In a pulmonary lab, a trained respiratory therapist is standing right next to you.
Right.
They are watching your posture, ensuring your lips are tightly sealed around the mouthpiece, and vocally pushing you to keep squeezing every last drop of air out of your lungs.
Yes. So if I'm at home, slouching on the sofa, maybe, you know, letting a little air leak out the side of my mouth because I'm distracted by the television, my technique is completely flawed.
Which happens a lot in remote settings.
A plastic tube can't see me slouching. It doesn't know if my lips are sealed. So how is the data not just absolute garbage?
That was the primary hurdle for the engineers. And the solution wasn't better hardware. It was smarter software.
Smarter software.
Yeah. The physical device is only half of the diagnostic tool. Remote-ready spirometers are embedded with software that operates essentially as a virtual respiratory therapist.
Okay.
It doesn't just passively record your breath. It features step-by-step guided workflows. It actively analyzes the mechanics of your exhalation in real time.
But how does it know my mechanics are wrong if it can't, like, physically see me?
It looks at the mathematical shape of your breath.
The shape.
Yeah. When you perform a forced exhalation correctly, your diaphragm pushes explosively. The software expects to see a massive, immediate vertical spike in air acceleration within the first few milliseconds.
Okay. And if I'm slouching?
If you are slouching, your diaphragm is physically compressed. It cannot fire explosively.
Mm.
So the software will detect a sluggish, rounded curve instead of a sharp spike. It instantly recognizes that your biomechanics were compromised.
Wow. It's like a biometric lock. It's almost like Face ID for your lungs. If the breath doesn't have the exact right mathematical shape and force, the software just refuses to unlock the data.
That is a highly accurate way to look at it. The software performs automated quality grading. It provides real-time audio and visual feedback.
Like telling you what you did wrong.
Exactly. Prompting you to blow harder or warning you if you hesitated. And it will flat out reject an attempt that doesn't meet the clinical criteria.
So it forces good technique by refusing to accept bad data.
Precisely. By doing that, the software removes the variability of the unsupervised environment, which preserves the clinician's diagnostic confidence.
That's brilliant. And once a doctor trusts the data coming from your living room, the entire medical approach changes.
It really does.
We aren't just taking a snapshot of your lung health during an office visit once every 6 months. We are building a continuous high-definition movie. The sources explicitly state that the value of this technology shifts from single-point diagnostics to longitudinal visibility.
Longitudinal visibility transforms chronic disease management.
Because of the frequency.
Yes. When a patient tests frequently at home, providers can establish a highly personalized baseline. They aren't comparing your lungs to a generic population average.
They are comparing your lungs today to your lungs last Tuesday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This allows them to detect minute declines in function long before you ever feel short of breath. And it allows them to track exactly how well a new daily inhaler is working.
Here's where it gets really interesting. To build that trend line, the devices track a few core metrics. The foundational one is FVC, or forced vital capacity.
Right, which is structurally very simple.
Yeah, mechanically, that is simply the total tank size of your lungs. It is the absolute maximum volume of air you can force out after taking the deepest breath possible.
Exactly.
But the second metric, FEV1, is where the diagnostics really happen. That is forced expiratory volume in 1 second. It's the amount of air you can smash out of your lungs in just the very first second of the test.
FEV1 is the most critical metric for assessing airflow limitation.
Why just the first second, though?
Think about the physical structure of your lungs. If you have an obstructive disease like asthma or COPD, your airways are inflamed and narrowed.
Okay.
Your total tank size, your FVC, might be completely normal. You can eventually get all the air out. But because the tubes are so narrow, pushing the air out is like trying to force a thick milkshake through a tiny cocktail straw.
Oh, man.
It takes much longer.
So your total volume is fine, but your speed in that first second, your FEV1, just plummets.
Correct. Clinicians compare those two numbers to create the FEV1-FVC ratio.
Okay, the ratio.
Right. A low ratio identifies an obstructive pattern. Conversely, if a patient has a restrictive pattern, meaning the lung tissue itself is stiff and cannot physically expand to hold much air.
Oh, so the tank size itself shrinks.
Yes. Both the total volume and the first second volume will drop proportionally. This keeps the ratio relatively normal, even though the patient is severely impaired.
Wow. And the advanced clinical grade portable units take this even further by visualizing this data through something called a flow volume loop.
Which is an incredibly powerful diagnostic tool.
It sounds incredibly technical, but it's basically a map of your breath. The horizontal axis is the volume of air, and the vertical axis is the speed the air is moving.
Right. When you blast the air out, the line on the graph shoots straight up to your peak expiratory flow, your absolute maximum speed.
And then?
Then it steadily slopes diagonally downward as your lungs empty and the pressure drops.
But if your airways are obstructed, that downward slope doesn't stay straight, does it?
No, it suddenly caves inward. It physically looks like someone took a scoop out of an ice cream cone.
I love that visual.
Mm-hmm.
And the software is constantly scanning for that specific scooped shape to instantly flag airway collapse.
Yeah.
It is brilliant. With this level of detailed tracking, it feels like stepping on a scale daily versus once a year.
That's a great comparison.
With consistent data, you see the trend line dipping long before the actual health crisis hits. You catch the 5-pound gain before it becomes a 50-pound medical crisis.
This raises an important question, though. The clinical value of that trend line is not guaranteed by the hardware.
What do you mean?
It is entirely dependent on patient adherence. A structured home spirometry program requires the patient to actually perform the tests at a consistent frequency following standardized protocols.
Right. If a patient only picks up the device when their chest already feels tight.
Exactly. Then the predictive power of the longitudinal data is completely lost. You are back to single-point diagnostics, just happening in a living room instead of a clinic.
Which highlights a massive friction point in healthcare engineering. I mean, if I'm a software developer and I have sensors capable of measuring flow volume loops, bronchodilator responses, barometric pressure, my instinct is going to be to build a device with a massive touchscreen, 50 different submenus, and a companion app with 1,000 features.
Of course. That's the tech mindset.
Right. I would want to cram every bell and whistle into it. You'd think doctors would always want the gadget with the absolute most bells and whistles.
And doing so would likely destroy the clinical utility of the device.
Really? Destroy it?
Yes. The source material emphasizes that when selecting a portable spirometer, clinical workflow integration must be prioritized over feature density. Complex systems inherently create friction.
Oh, I see. Because if you hand a highly complex Bluetooth-pairing multi-menu device to an 80-year-old patient who is already exhausted from COPD, they simply aren't going to use it.
They'll try it once, get frustrated by a pairing error, and throw it in a drawer.
Exactly. If a patient can't figure out how to turn it on, or if the battery dies after one use, it's basically an expensive paperweight, right? The most advanced medical sensor in the world is utterly useless if it's too annoying to turn on.
The practical criteria for home devices are heavily grounded in usability. They require a long battery life to survive weeks of testing without constant charging anxiety.
Right.
They need rapid startup times so a patient can perform a test immediately if they feel a symptom coming on without waiting for an operating system to boot.
Just grab and blow.
Exactly. And they require physical durability to survive the inevitable drops off a kitchen counter.
We also have to talk about the sheer physical reality of the test itself. I mean, We are asking patients to forcefully exhale as hard as humanly possible into a plastic tube.
Yes.
You are essentially asking them to aggressively spit into a machine on a daily basis. How does this thing not turn into a biological hazard within a week?
Infection control is a non-negotiable operational requirement. Forced exhalation naturally expels saliva, bacteria, and potential viral loads deep into the device's airflow pathways.
Gross, but true.
The engineering solution relies on strict hygiene protocols rather than just asking the patient to clean it.
Right, because you can't just rinse a highly calibrated ultrasonic sensor in the kitchen sink.
You absolutely cannot. Therefore, clinical-grade devices utilize single-use, disposable mouthpieces that often incorporate integrated bacterial and viral filters.
Oh, so the filter catches everything.
Right. The air passes through the filter, but the microscopic pathogens are trapped before they ever reach the internal sensors.
That's smart.
Furthermore, devices designed for multi-patient use in a clinic are engineered so that the breath pathway is entirely isolated. Cross-contamination between patients is physically impossible as long as the disposable components are swapped out.
And it isn't just the physical components that need to be streamlined, it's the data itself. The sources categorize these devices based on their depth.
Yes, there are several tiers.
You have consumer-grade devices at the bottom, which are essentially low-depth wellness trackers for athletes. You have screening devices for moderate clinic assessments. Then you have the clinical portable systems for high-depth diagnosis, and integrated telehealth units designed specifically for remote monitoring.
And the distinction between a wellness gadget and a remote monitoring tool often comes down to data management.
How so?
Secure cloud-based storage and automated trend analysis are essential. But the absolute critical feature is seamless integration with electronic medical records, or EMR systems.
Yeah, EMR integration, because the data has to flow silently and securely from my living room straight into my doctor's existing screen.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, a device without secure, seamless data transmission completely reduces its long-term utility.
Yeah, if a pulmonologist has to open a separate web browser, remember a unique password for a third-party portal, and manually search for my flow volume loops, they aren't going to do it. Doctors are too busy.
Exactly. Isolated data is useless data.
Right. If the data isn't sitting right next to my official chart, the whole system breaks down.
Isolated data severely limits longitudinal analysis. If the device cannot seamlessly push its highly accurate readings into the clinician's established workflow, it fails its primary mission.
The technology is only as effective as the communication network it relies on.
That's perfectly stated.
Well, we've painted a highly effective picture of decentralized care so far, but to truly understand a technology's place in the world, we have to look at its boundaries.
It's important to acknowledge them.
Yeah. The source material points out clear limitations. This isn't magic, it's engineering, and engineering always involves trade-offs.
The most prominent trade-off involves hardware longevity, particularly in lower-end portable models. These devices are susceptible to calibration drift over time.
Meaning the sensors slowly degrade and start lying to you.
Basically, yes. They lose their baseline accuracy as the physical components age or are subjected to environmental stress.
Oh, okay.
Premium devices combat this with factory-sealed, highly stable components, but it remains a risk. Additionally, even with the best virtual coaching software, self-administered tests generally show higher variability than tests conducted by a professional in a controlled lab.
Right, because there's still a human element.
Extreme environmental factors in a home can occasionally overwhelm the compensation algorithms. And, as we noted, the entire system relies heavily on patient compliance.
But despite those limitations, the clinical applications are expanding far beyond just tracking chronic asthma or COPD.
Oh, absolutely.
Portable spirometry is becoming a universal tool. So what does this all mean for you? Even if you don't have a chronic respiratory issue, you might encounter this tech soon.
Very likely.
The sources highlight its use in preoperative assessments checking if a patient's lungs are strong enough to handle general anesthesia before a minor surgery.
Which is crucial for patient safety.
It is being heavily deployed in occupational health screening, ensuring workers aren't developing lung issues from factory environments. It's used for post-infection recovery, and it is revolutionizing clinical trials.
That's a big one. It allows pharmaceutical companies to gather massive amounts of daily respiratory data without forcing trial participants to commute to a lab.
Acknowledging the trade-offs, like recognizing that lower-end devices might suffer calibration drift, is exactly what allows clinicians to safely deploy the technology across all these diverse fields.
Exactly. When a physician understands the slight increase in variability or the potential for drift, they factor that into their interpretation. They don't treat the data as flawless, but they recognize it as incredibly valuable, context-rich information that was previously impossible to gather.
It is a profound shift in agency. We are taking the tools of measurement out from behind the hospital walls and handing them directly to the individual.
That's the real power of longitudinal visibility. It's incredibly empowering for patients to take charge of their own data day by day.
Right. That highly detailed trend line of your own breath is no longer locked on a hospital server. It is something you build and own.
It's a huge step forward for patient autonomy.
It really is. We've seen how strict accuracy standards, combined with brilliant software that acts as a biometric lock against bad technique, have successfully shrunk the massive pulmonary lab down to pocket size. Add in the seamless integration of that data into medical records, and you have a quiet revolution happening in diagnostics.
Truly.
But it leaves a fascinating thought to mull over. If our home devices are now actively coaching us in real time, instantly analyzing the mathematical shape of our breath, and silently, securely beaming clinical-grade data to our doctors, where exactly is the line between our living room and the hospital?
It's getting very blurry.
We started by talking about those massive, intimidating glass booths. But as testing becomes continuous, invisible, and entirely decentralized, might we soon see a healthcare reality where a respiratory crisis is universally predicted, managed, and prevented by an algorithm before the patient ever physically feels a single symptom?
That's the goal.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the tools around you and keep learning.